you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Art Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Jay Dyer back on the show. Jay returns to discuss, well, a couple of his analysis he provided a while back regarding the book by Ann Jacobson about DARPA, and also we'll talk about baby boomers. Of course, Jay Dyer is the proprietor of Jay's Analysis, jaysanalysis.com. He's also the author of Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. And the soon-to-be-released, I have to make sure I have this right, the new title, Esoteric 2, More Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. Do I have that right, Jay?
Esoteric Hollywood 2.
Okay, I'm sorry. Esoteric Hollywood 2. I thought, okay, yeah.
It's, you're trying to sabotage me. It's not even out yet.
Okay, yeah. Esoteric Hollywood 2, More Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. Okay, so that title isn't very esoteric, but it pretty much says what it is, right? So,
well, it fits perfectly with movies.
Yeah, Jaws 2, Revenge of the Nerds 2.
They're gone with the sequel, yep.
Leprechaun 5. Of course, also you were co-hosted Hollywood Decoded, the show you can watch on the Guide Network, and of course, carries Amazon Prime. So what else are you up to?
I will be speaking in L.A. October 13th and 14th at a festival, and hopefully be on Sam Tripoli's podcast again in studio at Bill Burr Studios, All Things Comedy. Then I will also be doing a new TV show soon, hopefully. I will be filming some sizzle reels for that pretty soon. That's all I can say on that. And Esoteric Hollywood 2 is complete. And it's to the publisher, so hopefully it should be pretty soon when the text itself is actually fully done. But I do have probably some minor tweaking he'll have me do, like last time, if you remember. There were some sidebars to add and stuff like that. But the book is basically done. I mean, it's even all the footnotes are done now. So it's around, I don't know, 330, 40 footnotes. So it's another meaty project here.
Okay, well, you sound very busy, so very appreciative of your time tonight.
Better now, the book's done.
Okay, now, okay.
That was like the big weight hanging over me. It's just the books are so hard to get done.
Yeah, I know a couple of people who have written books, been given that assignment, and they hate it. because it just it's so taxing. It really is.
It's very taxing, yeah. And it's so meticulous, and it takes forever, and it's constant fixing, changing.
Well, tonight, like I said earlier, I'd have you back on to discuss. Well, you had an interesting debate, and you've had a couple on appearances. You've talked about baby boomers, the boomer generation, this generation that followed the greatest generation. So, baby boomers, what's your take on this cohort that was born between, 1946 and 1964? Right? If I have that right?
Uh-huh.
It's before the birth control picked it. Birth control became popular, I guess, but...
Well, I have a mustache dedicated to them tonight, and I've got my Florida Fish shirt, so I'm pro boomer tonight. I don't think you're not technically a boomer, right? You're like on the cusp, so
I missed it by a few years. Yeah, I'm an Xer, Generation X, actually. Yeah.
Okay. So that's crazy. You're in my generation?
Well, roughly, it's a long generation. Yeah, I'm about 11 years older than you, I think. But I was born in 1967, and that's the classification they gave us. That's what I was told in the 90s when that term was used, I guess. Right? Yeah.
Well, we did the tongue-in-cheek debate with Jim Goad. That turned out, I thought, pretty funny, because Jim Goad is a boomer, and he had some interesting insights, and they were kind of actually what you would expect boomers to say, which I thought was fun. But I think the criticisms apply to what other people have criticized about boomers appropriately, which is that they do share a good bit of the blame for present problems. Not all the blame. But I would say, first of all, it is legitimate to talk about generations in a critical way. The Bible does this. The Bible talks about different generations being evil, being wicked, and so forth. So I don't think it's necessarily wrong. Some people criticize that. But I also would say that it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Obviously, I don't think that everybody in any group is necessarily automatically bad, unless you're like in NAMBLA or something, then you're automatically bad. Jeez. But yeah, I mean, there are some groups that are all completely bad. But it's not to be mean or cruel, but I am the godfather of boomer posting, which is now kind of a popular thing that people do online. And I can take credit. I was the first person to write some satirical essays about boomers about 8-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. On blogs at the time that were shared pretty widely. So it's kind of picked up a little bit as a meme, and I think it's legitimate. I think it's fair to criticize that generation for a lot of the problems that we see today, because it's still boomers that hold the power structure, and they have the political positions, they have the corporate positions for the most part. We haven't yet transitioned into Gen Z running things and millennials running things. So we're still under this structure, which is really out of date. Now, sometimes people say this like, oh, you're really out of it, man. You know, then they mean it in some kind of pity, some sort of petty pop culture sense or revolutionary sense. I don't mean it that way. I mean it in a legitimate sense of how boomers are the most drugged, the most addled, the most mind controlled, the most out of it, not understanding what's going on generation in the history of the world, perhaps. Even worse than, you know, their parents, the great generation and so forth, who are responsible for some of the things that the boomers grew up with and were raised with. But as others have pointed out, it's the boomers that have raised the millennials and the Gen Z that they bitch about. And so I think the main criticism is just that there's this childishness about them, this inability to take criticism or be considered wrong, that echoes a fact. I would say that they had it very easy, that they had these advantages job-wise, college-wise, that they expect everybody younger than them to just go do, which is very difficult nowadays. So, you know, when you hear Fox News and boomers criticize the millennials, maybe some millennials are lazy, but come on, Where's this responsibility that they supposedly believe everybody shares a part in, right? And so I feel very strongly about the problems in the boomers. And I have had many, many boomers mess with me and pull some strings on me that make me anti-boomer. So I've seen it firsthand. I know how boomers are, how they act. And in fact, I even took a pretty radical position that I try to minimize all of my interactions with boomers to be safe. Because boomers are dangerous. They will tell you to get vaccines. They will tell you to join the military. They will tell you to get your pills from the millions of pill ads on TV. They're a dangerous group, and you can't red pill the boomer. Anybody that can red pill a boomer gets a genuine golden star from me because it can't be done.
I was going to say that I was going to title Baby Boomers, also subtitle it, the normie question, the NQ.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good way to put it.
It's the NQ, right? it's almost like that they have such a strong normalcy bias because of the information that they grew up under. They were probably, I think, comparatively the most brainwashed, most mind controlled, right, by the media that they had. The media was centrally controlled, and there's a lot of we have a lot to back it up. I'm not just throwing an accusation out. Right. I mean, I think probably for a quick read to understand the problem of the boomer perspective, and maybe to I think it's an article you penned a while back called "What Is the New World Order and Why Does It Matter?" And I highly recommend that article because you kind of it's masterfully done. You kind of compact this whole thing into a few short paragraphs. And I recommend that strongly to someone who has no idea of what we're talking about. Other than that, maybe sit down and start reading a few books. In that article, you kind of take it up what the New World Order is, who represents New World Order. You kind of name the corporations, the banks, and how they interact, and how it's been promoted. This is a longstanding plan, and they have a different idea of history. They think history is a series of events and accidents, knocking into one another, as opposed to having some sort of plan or pattern or path to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as you're throwing quite an accusation at the boomers, what made them? Let's go back to the Greatest Generation, the World War II generation that marched, dutifully marched off to fight the wars for democracy, the Second World War. Yeah. And they grew up on Frank Capra, Why We Fight, that was also helped produce by Disney Corporation, the animation, these things.
Yeah.
So we saw an example of World War II, how the Entertainment Information News Agency was completely dominated by the government for the purposes of propaganda, for massive social engineering, also for the war fighting, which is social engineering. So maybe follow some progression. What happened to them?
Well, the Great Generation, of course, in their way, thought they saved the world, from the evils of empire and fascism and all that. And then you had their children believing that they were supposed to rebel against these strictures of suburbia and being a company man and all this stuff. And so they were the ones that were unfortunately thrust into the 60s countercultural revolution. And even the ones who were the conservatives of that era still got affected by the counterculture. They still felt like they saved the world. So there's this save the world collective complex that they and their father seem to have, which I'm not a strict libertarian collectivist, but I mean individualist, but I can enjoy the criticism of the idea that, like, you didn't save the world. Like, you're not a part of this collective that thinks that they saved the world. You could tell yourself that, but come on, you didn't save the world. You fought wars for elite interests, for bankers that were advantageous to a lot of different powerful groups. And it's really the propaganda that made you think you were saving the world. So the boomers felt like they had to save the world in a different way. They felt like they had to save the world by rebelling against what they thought were strictures, or what they thought was they rebelled against what they thought was tradition, and not against the oligarchs who wanted them to rebel against the tradition. So it was another phase of the revolution. As you know, you've done interviews discussing the fact that suburbia, this was all designed to get people out of ethnic communities. And boomerism is a phase after that, you know, 40s, 50s suburbia creation of the company man. The rebelling against that is just another phase in the revolution. So the boomers were given their era of revolution, their era of propaganda. It culminates in the counterculture, which we know from Dave McGowan's book, from other books, Jay Stevens's book, Stormy Heaven. Ultimately, the suggestion is that this was guided and steered by powerful interests. It was not organic revolution. So the boomers were really, unfortunately, heavily, as you said, inducted into this. And a big part of it wasn't just the psyops and the pop culture. Drugs. Boomers were drugged massively. Not just, like, you know, illegal drugs, but like big pharma and the beginning of vaccines being rolled out. Drugs. And decades of propaganda told them that the system's drugs are good, but the black market ones are all bad, right? So they almost all bought into the drug war. And I'm not saying everything should be legalized. I'm just saying, like, it's funny. This isn't one you can always trip a boomer up on, because, you know, certain boomers I know, I can't stand them dopers. There's all them dopers. And meanwhile, he's on 50 pills. he's on worse pills than the dopers. Them kids down there at the canyon are a bunch of dopers, and you're on like 50 of the worst, you know, big pharma pills for everything from erections to depression.
Yeah, obesity, anxiety, and so you're some guys smoking.
They're legal. They're legal.
You're smoking a marijuana cigarette.
Those are legal drugs, Tim. They're not illegal. So there's this collective obliviousness to understanding kind of the basic framework of how big power things, big power politics, big pharma, big tech, big science, how any of that works. That's, I think, the main problem. And for example, it's very, very difficult. I'm not sure why, but it's super difficult for boomers to be awakened to the question, the red pill on the question of like the false left-right dialectic. For some reason, they always still go back into, well, you're either a Democrat or a GOP. You know, they love that GOP Democrat WWF game. I don't know why, but they do. They love that Cold War stuff. It's the boomers of the Democratic Party and the rhinos that are all behind this, you know, Russia hacked the election stuff. They just love that sports. They love their sports ball. And that makes sense, because politics is like sports ball. I remember my bosses, for example, when I was a teenager, when I had my first job, the family that I worked for were lifelong committed Democrats. And I was, I remember, 18. I didn't know anything, but I was interested in why they were committed to liberal politics as boomers. And we had countless conversations about this at work. And they always were just very candid about, well, we've always been Democrats. You know, it's like the same idea as the boomer in the Baptist church. Why are you Baptist? Oh, well, we've always been Baptists. So they're traditional while they rebel against their tradition. And that's, I think, the weird thing about the boomer is that it's a constantly contradictory doublethink position. And when you try to explain Orwell or doublethink to a boomer, it's always falling back into the very thing that you're trying to explain. It's like, I just explained to you that David Rockefeller funded communism. Oh, you must be a commie. You and them commies. Well, maybe David Rockefeller was a commie infiltrator. No, come on. I mean, it's just you cannot get a boomer to understand
David Rockefeller was a communist.
Capital funds communism, and they love it.
Well, that's what the John Birch Society was all about, I guess, wasn't it?
Well, like, I've showed the David Rockefeller's New York Times article and that Yale magazine about Mao from the 20s or wherever. Mm-hmm. I've showed this to countless boomers as a test. And they either just say something snarky back, like, "Oh, you think you know your stuff, do you? You're just a little hot. You're hot shit, aren't you? You think you're hot shit?" You know, it's like, what? Can you not grasp the point I'm trying to make? Or they're like, "Well, I guess David Rockefeller was just a commie." He's not a commie. He doesn't care about this ideology. It's a tool. So, oh, you must be one of them conspiracy theorists. So, anyway, I'm ranting, but you get the point.
Yeah, I mean, grew up in the environment. I mean, again, consider the environment they grew under for their information. Propaganda. I mean, I think Operation Mockingbird kicks in 1949. This is like a couple years after the CIA opens its doors. And, of course, Operation Mockingbird is complete manipulation of the news media for the benefit of the CIA or the interest that it represents, that it's an agency for. So the news has been completely manipulated. You've cited works like Francis Stoner Saunders' The Cultural Cold War, and how the agency infiltrated newspapers and magazines, periodicals, artwork, and these things. The book, a very important book I read, was Christopher Simpson's The Science of Coercion, which more or less, I think, made the case very strongly that the whole technology purpose of mass communication, be it radio, you know, the Princeton radio project with the War of the Worlds, that's pre-war, 1938, but after the war, mass communication itself was studied as a science, largely through the War Department or Department of Defense, as it was later called, but also by the CIA itself for the purposes of mass manipulation and these things. TV, look at television. I mean, they grew up on television.
Right? Exactly. The first generation to really be indoctrinated into a lot of experimental psychological warfare techniques and technology like you're talking about. Now, we know, too, that all the big newscasters that were rolled out during their phase, they were all the boomer newscasters were all CFR. And try to get a boomer to understand why the CFR matters. Good luck with that. Unless they were in the John Birch Society, and then, of course, the John Birch is a very limited, it's a limited scope of what's going on.
Yeah, and the CFR are communists then, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's the commie infiltrators sent by Moscow and Putin or something. But yeah, I think...
the whole idea of cultural degradation that right-wing boomers would, you know, they reacted to the counterculture. And this was something I was kind of a part of in the 80s when I was coming of age, the 80s reaction to the 60s, sort of the hangover, just a rejection of it when the boomers became, you know, yuppies. The Bezmerov conspiracy thing where the communists are trying to morally subvert the West, with cultural Marxism, the whole project was imported by OSS, CIA. It was a Western project and continues to be.
Yeah, so it's very difficult to get the boomer to understand that they thought they were fighting the Cold War on the side of the CIA against these dastardly atheistic communists. And it's only been, you know, more information has come out with the internet and publications of a lot of this material that we come to understand that actually, the CIA was promoting all the stuff that you think is degenerate and commie, particularly in the cultural sphere. And why was the CIA so interested in promoting all this degenerate commie cultural stuff? Well, because that was conceived of as the Cultural Cold War, as you said, the Congress of Cultural Freedom, promoting everything from symphonies to Jackson Pollock to Andy Warhol to this pop art crap. And the idea was that we can show the world in an advertising scheme, in a way, how we believe in freedom. You know, we don't believe in the restricting of liberties like the Eurasian monstrosities and communists do. Meanwhile, of course, communism was set up in these other countries by the OSS, by the aid of Western power structures to fight the evil, quote, fascists. So you start to notice that the good guys and the bad guys just shift based on which phase the technocrats want to bring in. In fact, that's what I just read in H.G. Wells's New World Order, was him talking about how, yeah, Bolshevism was good for its time. It achieved some good, but it's not enough to bring the technocracy, because to bring the technocracy, we need the engine of global international capitalism first to put in the infrastructure. Then we can switch on the total technocracy crap. And he says that the way to sell the revolution isn't through top-down tyranny, but through cultural, quote, freedom. So you can erect everything about surveillance, everything about the H.G. Wells uses the phrase of the complete control of all biological forms of life. Again, we've talked about many times for years now on your podcast, the rewrite of the biosphere. H.G. Wells talked about this, and he said that that's the real revolution isn't limited to one sphere. It's total. It's fully encompassing. And this is what the boomer can't understand, is that the enemies that they thought they were fighting weren't the real enemies. They were faux enemies propped up by a shadow enemy. The shadow enemy wants and runs these institutions that boomers thought were their friends, that thought were fighting for freedom in the West and markets and all this crap. And all these countries that accepted the Western markets and all that stuff now promotes all the degeneracy and the trannies and all this stuff in all the other countries. The famine and all this and Pussy Riot and all that crap. That's all promoted along with the free markets. And so then you start to realize when you read the CIA biographers, Miles Copeland and these other guys, that's what they say. Yeah, of course we introduce this stuff as a psyop. Of course we bring all this nasty porn into these other countries to bring down the population and mess them up in social engineering. What do you think we're doing it for? You think we're doing it because we actually believe in freedom? No, the only people that believe that are the idiots.
Yeah, that's why, what was it? It was Frank Carlucci when he was with the CIA in the 70s. He's the one that imported pornography into Portugal during its transfer from Salazar in the mid-70s.
Oh, wow.
And that was, again, destroying the Christian Commonwealth that then existed under the Salazar regime. Similar thing occurred with Franco. After Franco died in 1975, you had the destruction of Spain as being sort of a Christian organic society into a liberal democracy, and then there you go, right? Fault starts.
That's what H.G. Wells says, is that it's not the revolution is not to be fought against class. Okay, so boomers thought they were fighting Marxists in the Cold War. H.G. Wells says it's not just class warfare. The warfare is total. It's a paradigm. It's all of life. It's economics. It's biology. It's religion. The revolution is for all areas of life.
Mm-hmm.
And boomers have to understand and can't understand that. They can't understand that wide of a scope because they had so many decades of being told about, you know, the evil Russian or the evil commie or whatever. And the evil Russian and commie had their business phase. They served their usefulness, their time, and they expired. And once they expired, it moved on. And in fact, that's something that we read in Annie Jacobson's book and in Alex Abaya's Rand Corporation book, mm-hmm. is that the transition was perfect. The timing was perfect after the Cold War. And decades prior, this is something that I suspected was right. I had not completely confirmed it until I read both of these. That absolutely they had planned the war on terror. And so remember how Engdahl talks about mm-hmm. them studying counterinsurgency in the 60s with swarming and mob techniques at the student riots?
Mm-hmm.
That's all absolutely true. And that's exactly what they did to apply it to the, quote, war on terror. Where were all these jihadi terrorists in the 30s, 40s, 50s? Now, there were some terror bombings in those time periods, and there were a few Islamic ones. But why is it that after the Cold War, suddenly the jihad becomes, and that's because the Rand Corporation said that's what would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they created the NGO complex in the 80s
yes.
to handle this new phase, because you'd have to be some, I guess, a little less direct in the coming age, in the coming new struggle, the coming long war, forever war.
Yeah, the humanitarian NGO complex that is the front for intelligence work nowadays.
Yeah, Engdahl's Manifest Destiny book I just finished covers a lot of that. It goes into detail what happened in Yugoslavia, and you just read through, it seems like a Western slogan, all the political slogans are right out of the West. Like in Yugoslavia, all of a sudden, spontaneously, this spray-painted fist appeared on walls, you know.
Oh, Otpor.
Otpor, yeah. And the same fist appears, I think, is in the Ukraine or similar in Ukraine.
It does, yeah.
You know, it's just, it's right out of the same. And of course, you've talked about the guy Gene Sharp, right, up there.
Yes, Otpor was part of, I forget the color, but it was a color revolution.
Yeah. And it's all engineered. And he details how that country just is just systematically taken apart. And you just it's a phase. They start the wars, then they make foreign aid dependent on secession from Belgrade. And then when that 1990 Rambouillet, then the second phase kicks in 98-99 with the war to unseat what's his name, Milosevic, who then dies in prison. Then he's found he wasn't guilty of all those war crimes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, Bill Clinton said he was, though, so he was.
There right? must be, yeah.
Humanitarian crisis.
But this whole worldview, you've talked about it. I've done several interviews just with the importance of figures like Henry Luce, the Time Life Empire, working in conjunction. These are concentric circles. This isn't separate. This is the point you've made in so many of your articles and talks, is that this is an interconnected complex here because it represents the same interest. The big money are going to produce the periodicals, the magazines, the TV shows. They make the media. This is like the bookie, the Magus, where they can create an entire reality because they control the media. And as the media gets more sophisticated, their ability to control it becomes stronger because... You know, that's what people, CNN, right? That's what CNN is all about, or was all about. So,
yeah, I mean, the total spectrum, full spectrum dominance is very real. It's not just a slogan. It's not something that Ingdahl just came up with. It's something that RAND and DARPA and the NGOs and the Reagan 80s era, especially, they all came up with that, the idea of full spectrum dominance and mastering the human domain more recently in terms of the Air Force and drone technology. It's all connected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I talked about that years ago on one of your first podcasts. And I was just amazed to see that in Annie Jacobson's book, that's really what she talks about. That's the thesis of this book, is the connectedness of all these programs. She kind of lets you put some pieces together. Like, for mm-hmm. example, mentions MK Ultra. Hello, yes, obviously MK Ultra is part of all these same programs. I said that for a long, long time because it was even in John Marx's book towards the end, where he's talking about the creation of the super soldier, the idea of the bottling biotech modifications. That is absolutely an outworking of MK Ultra. There's no question about it. She says the exact same thing in her book. So what you have to understand is when you go back to the pre-Cold War period, you go back to the 40s and 50s, it's the Second World War is what allows for the creation of certain organizations. The Air Force comes into being as the parent company of what will be DARPA. So DARPA is essentially an Air Force operation, just like NASA is an Air Force operation. And DARPA is going to be the R&D managerial technocratic arm of the establishment. If you remember in the Quigley talks, we talked about that all important middle chapter about managerial technocratic control. And the reason that chapter is so important is that Quigley told us back in the 60s that is the future. And even though he doesn't talk about DARPA, this is what he's talking about. He's talking about Annie Jacobson's topic here in that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
That's the creation of the complete technocratic dominance in all spheres, economics, trade, even down to money being basically, Bitcoin, these kinds of things. I'm not saying Bitcoin is necessarily a giant scam any of these things could be fine. But the point is that they can be turned to, detrimental purposes.
Of course. Yeah.
So this is where we get, John Nash and John von Neumann, these great computer scientists, and they're brought into working for Air Force and their nascent RAND Corporation / DARPA under the guise of fighting the bad guys. And so this is why propaganda and psychological warfare is so important, is that you have to have these bad guys to convince even the smart people to be brought into this complex to build the infrastructure that will enslave everybody. And I think that this is what's so astounding, is that all of these people that thought they were building these things to fight the commies in the Cold War, they didn't realize, and I generally don't think many of them did, they thought they were doing good things. they didn't realize this was going to be the giant global infrastructure that will be the giant global Skynet smart city that's intended to enslave. And that's what Jacques Attali says in his book. Of course it's to create a giant global electronic prison.
Yeah. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, this is according to Wikipedia, is responsible for development of emerging technologies for use by the military. Originally known as the Advanced Research Project Agency, ARPA, the agency was created in February 1958 by President Dwight D. Eisenhower in response to Soviet launching of Sputnik 1 in 1957. That's, of course, that's another PSYOP. Since its inception, the agency's mission is ensuring that the United States avoids further technological surprise by collaborating with academic, industry, and governmental partners, so it's a private government partnership, fascist. Yep. DARPA formulates, even executes research and development projects to expand the frontiers of technology and science, often beyond immediate U.S. military requirements. DARPA-funded projects have provided significant technologies that influence many non-military fields, such as computer networking and the basis for modern internet, graphic user interface, and information technology. The name of the organization first changed from its founding name, ARPA, to DARPA in March 1972, momentarily changing back to ARPA in February 1993, only to revert back to DARPA in March 1996. So that's the kind of the official history of the agency. But I find it interesting that when it opens its doors, this kind of gives you the relationship of the military-industrial complex, or maybe partially why it exists. It opens its doors in 1959, after Dwight D. Eisenhower signs the law in 1958. Its first director was Roy Johnson. He left a $160,000 a year management job at General Electric for an $18,000 a year job at ARPA. Of course, this is $1958 dollars. So here he is. He's taking a 90% pay cut. Of course, he was the management at General Electric. Of course, General Electric is going to benefit mildly from the military industrial complex. So I gather the stocks in his blind trust probably did very well. but apparently he left after DARPA lost its, originally it was supposed to be involved in space research, and then they opened up NASA, which is a whole other scam, right? So I thought that was interesting that he left, here's a guy taking a 90% pay cut.
You're right.
So,
just like NASA shut down. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So,
I mean, here's a great one. You know, we've talked about the Iron Mountain report before. We talked about how Miles Copeland at the beginning of his book said, it's satire, but it's real. It's a real thing. And actually, there's a similar example at the beginning of her book where she talks about the Gaither report, which was a collection of National Security, RAND Corporation, Stratcom, it was the CIA, the Weapons Engineering Group, Raytheon, Sandia, Boeing, Lockheed, Hughes, Shell Oil, IBM, Bell Telephone, New York Life Insurance, Chase Manhattan. They all met to discuss the creation of a military-industrial complex shadow government.
So would it be any surprise that their conclusion was we need a shadow military-industrial complex government?
Yeah, but... That doesn't exist.
I think Rick Gaither, Roland Gaither was the head of the Ford Foundation, right?
It's the Gaither Gospel Hour. No, I'm joking. No, was he? I didn't know that.
The Ford Foundation. So there you go.
The Ford Foundation presented as well.
Oh, okay. Which had been taken over by the Rockefellers by that point.
So. And guess what they said? They said, we need a giant nuclear threat now to begin this giant program, which is going to be DARPA.
Yeah, and I guess
basically scare the crap out of everybody, thinking they're going to get nuked.
Yeah, and they do the duck and cover stuff, right?
Yep. Guess who jumps in here? Also, Monsanto jumps in on pages 52 and 53 as part of this. These are the same people that start the Manhattan Project. So it's all interlinked. Mm-hmm. It's all the same group.
And I think Roundup, wasn't that developed by DARPA for Vietnam? Herbicide, Agent Orange.
That's where we get, and people think there's no such thing as atmospheric spraying, even though DARPA did it, CIA did it in Vietnam, admittedly. Mm-hmm. We sprayed chemicals from the sky, but there's no chemical spraying from the sky. That doesn't exist.
Take DARPA, I guess it's opening up in the late 50s. I guess it really gets its sea legs during the Vietnam War. Because the Vietnam War, well,
yes,
it was a huge psychological warfare, social engineering thing, of course, all wars are. But it was also, and a lot of things, there's also the, you know, the heroin trade, these things, military-industrial complex. But Vietnam itself sort of became a proving ground or testing site for some of these things, some of these psychological warfare methods or strategies and also weaponry.
Yes, Agent Orange, they began, I think, let's see, yeah. So Edward Teller, who is the father of geoengineering, who's also one of the fathers of the Manhattan Project, is also intimately involved in working with the nascent DARPA and the plans for what would be used in Vietnam, right? So he came up with some of these crazy ideas for atmospheric alteration, but it's by the time, as you said, of Vietnam that this starts to be used. By the way, I wanted to mention, too, she has a couple chapters on underground bases, and there some of the paperclip guys actually did help design underground bases. So we're getting into really crazy conspiracy territory here. But
so we have Nazi, yes, underground bases.
There are underground bases. They are real, and it was paperclip guys that helped design, for example, Raven Rock, Site R, the Cheyenne Mountain Complex, NORAD. Those were all designed by these guys. And then but I wanted to say, too, that they were already planning work on directed energy weapons and Tesla-style technology even back when she dates it around the Jason scientists working on this idea, even right prior to Vietnam, which is pretty crazy. Jason scientists are important because this is basically, quite literally, a secret society of top government scientists. Yes, it exists. That's a real thing. And they are the ones that, you know, promote a lot of the more crazy ideas, like what's the crazy, let's blow up giant bombs in the atmosphere, if that's real, to whatever degree that's real. Those kinds of guys, they're the ones, as you said, coming up with the ideas. Hey, let's try spraying a bunch of people in Saigon and in Vietnam. Let's try giant relocation programs, camps, for psychological operations. But what they were trying to do was move villagers into different places to see if they could, you know, alter their worldview. And then, oh, well, looks like we're just going to have to spray. This is connected to Fort Detrick, MK Search, bioweapons, which is MK Ultra. This is pages 126, 127. We're just going to have to spray chemicals because we just can't get those darned pesky Viet Cong just chemtrail spray roundup from the sky.
Yeah, it was Fletcher Prouty. People have different opinions of Fletcher Prouty, exactly who he was, but he tells a story in before the escalation of the Vietnam War, is that the U.S. I guess it was CIA working with the military had purposely relocated 1 million Tonkinese, these are people from northern Vietnam, into the south and just left them there to create social disruption.
Yes, that's exactly what you talked about, this relocation programs. And then she talks about other guys involved in this, like Gordon McDonald, for example, who's the guy cited by Brzezinski. If you remember in Between Two Ages when Brzezinski has that section about space weapons and Skynet type stuff and weather control. Brzezinski in Between Two Ages is citing Gordon McDonald, who she devotes like a whole chapter to. He's one of the Jason scientists who was testing all this stuff out in Vietnam. So the key thing to understand here is that you're right, Tim. Vietnam is drugs, is social engineering. Guess what? It was also a big scientific test lab.
Yeah, it's because Doug Valentine's book on the Phoenix program is probably the definitive and probably only a real example, at least that I'm aware of, book on that topic. But he also recently wrote a book, compiled a book called CIA as Organized Crime, and he gets into this where the many of the technologies and strategies and methods that were refined or developed in the Phoenix program, which was a counterinsurgency program in Vietnam. It was there to target what they called the Viet Cong infrastructure, meaning the civilians of Vietnam. And yes, this subjected them to all type. And one thing, it was torture. One thing, of course, the slaughter of villages, which, you know, this wholesale rampant slaughter to demoralize the enemy. But one thing was many things like the interrogation centers and methods were then developed and used in the development of the Department of Homeland Security and also what we call fusion centers. These reconnaissance centers are where they regional information center. I forget the actual term, but basically that's the basis for today's fusion centers here in this country.
Yeah, so many things really come out of the test bed of Vietnam, and a lot of this was new information to me. I didn't know a whole lot about Vietnam before some of the books that you're talking about, some of the topics that she discusses. A lot of this Vietnam stuff was new to me because I read a decent amount, you know, from Quigley and other books on, say, World War II, but it wasn't super up on Vietnam. But Vietnam is also not just the chemtrail spraying; it's also the test ground for two things: drones, drone warfare, electronic grids that use sensors to send information to other areas of the battlefield to relay back to a home base. Now, you say, "Well, that's why is that so important?" That's the beginning of the integration of AI and drones together in a theater of war. She talks about
GPS was developed in a theater of war.
That's where this comes from. Direct outworking of this very thing. And so it's not just that, it's also weather control. She specifically talks about modifying the weather and that this was done to try to, say, bring a bunch of either droughts or bring a bunch of rain, flood the Viet Cong or whatever. So they tried all kinds of weather control. They tried all kinds of new experiments it's called Project Emote, was the one that dealt with weather, I believe. Or no, that's the one that's the spraying, the Agent Orange. But anyway, point being is just that this is where you start to see the rise of Skynet, quite literally, is from this test tube of Vietnam. And that really blew me away. I mean, I knew a lot of conspiracy stuff, but I did not know that. That was really mind-blowing. I mean, I knew about the FEMA camps and I knew about that, but the idea that let's have giant relocation programs, let's do that for social engineering. You know, Dave talks about the possibility of creation of the serial killer with mm-hmm. the Phoenix program, as you mentioned, Doug Valentine's book. But you've also got this idea of the creation of Skynet and drone warfare. The first drones were tested out in Vietnam.
Yep. And she talked this weaponry that you can send it out and it makes a decision to kill you or not.
Yeah. Right. It's a grid. They came up with the idea of not just a system that, say, uses sensors, but a meta systems system, she talks about. So we need a system that integrates the computer base, that integrates the bombs out in the field, that integrates the sensors, that integrates the drones. So the interlinking of all the systems. And she says, guess what? That leads to transhumanism. Well, of course it does.
Mm-hmm. She also talks about the weaponization of anthropology,
mm-hmm.
Where anthropologists are used to go in and, I guess, study the culture and then in an effort to win the hearts and minds, which I think is the phrase that was coined for the Vietnam War, win the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese people. Now, this opens up a whole can of worms because this brings in the broad issue, I think, of psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly is being done to win the hearts and minds of these people? What exactly does that mean on the ground for these people that are the target of that program?
Terror, in this case. It means terror. It means the use of, you see this portrayed in Coppola's Apocalypse Now, where they're flying into Vietnam and they're blasting Wagner, right?
Yeah.
Dun, from giant speakers, and it's like, you're imagine being some Viet Cong guy, you'd never heard anything like this. You probably never heard a speaker, and it's like giant helicopters flying. Nowadays, we think of what? Abu Ghraib and playing Barney, supposedly, and playing Britney Spears and Metallica. these are the same ideas, right? It's out of Vietnam. So, yeah, all kinds of different techniques. The usage of drugs, as we said, different biological warfare agents, different testing, very extreme psychological warfare measures of terror that you're talking about. And so what's interesting that ties in with what we said earlier about Rand is the counterinsurgents. Simultaneous to this, they're studying in Vietnam the way the Viet Cong respond so that they can have a perfected study of counterinsurgency to know how in the future groups will react, and I would venture to say how to actually run terror groups. In other words, how we're going to run the jihadis. We're going to know how they work because we just spent all this money and time studying how counterinsurgency works in Vietnam, because the tactics are going to be the exact same.
Yeah, because outfits like Al-Qaeda or ISIS are ultimately assets or proxy soldiers for the West to destabilize those target countries. And also, I think, arguably, to destabilize domestically, because it strikes terror into the hearts of the American yes. people and makes us more malleable and, you know, easier to govern. Something that something like the Gaither Report and NSC 68 and these things, which is somewhat like the Gaither Report, would call, you know, you need this warfare economy. They look at peace as a problem because in peacetime, it's hard to manage the population. In wartime, right. It's easier to manage the population.
Yeah, you can ration shit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She goes into talking about Andrew Marshall, and he kind of pioneers the idea of the Skynet drone force. They're making the whole Air Force into AI drones, which is where we're basically transitioning into nowadays. We're in that phase now where they said, you know, long ago that we'll eventually have the AI drone Air Force. And then she goes into kind of exotic weaponry and talking about, you know, plasma weapons and various forms of lasers and this kind of stuff, which sounds like, oh, so what? Why is that a big deal? Well, it's a big deal because, again, it's all connected. It's all part of the same structure that is interested in mastering the human domain, not for freedom, but for complete and total control. Mastering the human domain. Does that sound like freedom to you? Does that sound like they want freedom? Mastering the human domain.
Full spectrum dominance.
Full spectrum dominance. Does that sound like freedom?
No. Not very liberal, is it?
Doesn't sound liberal. I thought it was liberal. No, it's more like, you know, Terminator.
But example, some of these technologies, like you can use the pretext. This kind of reminds me of what the Tavistock Institute, when it started studying shell shock in the early 20th century, how they studied it not for the purposes of trying to heal these wounded soldiers, but to weaponize it, to study, how can we manipulate the mind? If you subject it to trauma, we can shatter the mind and weaponize or utilize it in some way. A similar thing might be happening with DARPA, because they talk about post-traumatic stress disorder and other injuries caused in these theaters of war, where they develop, we have to map the brain to heal it. We have to put in implants in these things. We have limbs that have to be connected wirelessly to the human nervous system. Well, all that sounds great if you're putting together human beings that have been blown apart that you've sent over there to go fight or whatever. But that stuff, it can be easily, and I arguably is going to be weaponized to the extent that they've developed that they develop it.
Absolutely. I mean, the people who sent Kissinger says you're fodder for war. That's what that common guy is. Do you think he wants to give you a brain chip to fix your PTSD? No. You're in a test tube. I was saying earlier on the other show, you know, Animal Farm presented things like a farm, you know, and a farm runs for profit. You slaughter the animals to sell the food and make profit. But that's not where the technocrats want to take it. Profit is going to be done away with. Markets, that's all going away. We're going into the zoo. It's going to be the test lab zoo, and there things are done for the purpose of research and development and ultimately just stamping it out because you're not needed anymore. But yes, there's a whole section where she goes into at length brain chips for PTSD. Oh, we're going to Wounded Warrior Project. We're going to help the troops. We're going to give them brain plants to help them remember and forget their traumas. Come on. And she says, by the way, that they have developed the you know, the means and the inoculations and the drugs, for example, to actually cause you to forget things, certain aspects of your past. They know where to target in the brain to make you have memory loss and perhaps even implanted memories. Yes.
Internal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, right?
Yes. You know, classic MK Ultra type stuff. And she even, you know, ties it into fiction, believe it or not. She talks about all the typical fiction stuff, and she says how important fiction is, which is the thesis of Jay's analysis, of course, mm-hmm. is that fiction is very important for this because it's not just conditioning people, but actually she says herself, Chris Carter, and Gail Ann Hurd, the co-producer, writer of Terminator with James Cameron, they got special access to the Pentagon to write this book and whatever projects, I guess, Gail Ann Hurd and Chris Carter were up to. So did you catch that?
Mm-hmm.
Here's two Hollywood people mm-hmm. and Annie Jacobson hanging out at the Pentagon to talk about what to put in the movies.
He's the one that, of course, does the X-Files. The X-Files spinoff, The Lone Gunman, who has that, you know, yeah. The pilot episode, which foretells 9/11.
Yeah, she talks about T-2000, and she's like, oh, yeah, this is, we got this, this idea comes out of all the stuff from Skynet and DARPA. Of course it does. So it's not vice versa. It's not. You know, James Cameron and Gail Ann Hurd came up with the Terminator, and then the government called them in. There's always been this cyclical relationship. It's always been this way.
Yeah, it's obviously, you've done countless interviews and written and shows about the connection between Entertainment Hollywood and the War Department, Defense Department, CIA. It's official now. There's a liaison office now. And it's not just like Top Gun, you know, boosting recruitment, you know, by everyone thinking they go out and beat Tom yeah. Cruise and have an affair with Val Kilmer. But if you look at movies like, what was that? A movie about L.A. being taken over by aliens, and the U.S. soldiers come in and save the day, and it's this one big ad for the military, and
Battle L.A. or something.
Yeah, Battle L.A., these things. I mean, yeah. So it's all been coordinated, and that coordination goes way back. That goes back to, like, Jimmy Stewart doing, mm-hmm. you know, you can be the Air Force, the Army Air Corps. You get a uniform, you get girls. You also get your ass shot out of the sky, and you firebomb civilians, yeah. but we won't talk about that.
go back to Howard Hughes making those war movies.
Oh yeah, Hell's Angels and these things. Yeah, that's the 20s, right, or late 20s. That's not even they're silent films, aren't they?
Yeah,
yeah, that, yeah. So, but with DARPA, I mean, what you're saying here, what Annie Jacobson is saying here, is that this agency is engaged in all these secretive programs. There's no, effectively no accountability.
No, of course not.
Agencies, right? So, I mean, yeah. I mean, what are they up to? You know?
Well, she even goes into the last section of the CIA and DARPA creating what they call trusted narrative networks. And this is the idea of where these entities influence the media to create trusted narrative networks. And you say, what is that? Well, that's just simply influencing the media to trust what they say. So in other words, the mass media hires DARPA and the CIA to help them manipulate you to trust them. And thank God it's not working that well. They're having a problem with trust nowadays, which is a good, but that's because a lot of these people, and she talks about this in this chapter on narrative networks, they are committed to radical materialism. There's a guy she interviews or talks to, his name is Dr. Paul Zak, and he says when he graduated from Harvard, he figured out that the brain is nothing but a molecule, and he's figured out through drugs what the exact molecule is to make people happy. It's the brain's moral molecule, and we can erase people's fear and morals. Remember this? Remember the supposedly it was a crazy conspiracy theory that DARPA said they could attack people's moral center in the brain and erase it? Well, now here he's claiming it. And he says, it's all possible because there is no soul. There's nothing but matter. They just believe in physicalism.
So we're just all golems?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, the idea that everything is just materialism. It's all chemical reactions, and it's just a question of tweaking it, manipulating it. And I think E. Michael Jones phrased it as instead of religion being the opium of the masses, opium becomes religion of the masses.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they're trying to do. That's what, you know, with Oxycontin generation. That's what we were talking earlier in this talk about, you know, how the baby boomers, how they'll condemn the use of illegal drugs, but they'll be addicted to dozens of legal drugs. A lot of right. these things are anxiety medication, dealing with, you know, mood-altering drugs, psychotropic drugs and these things. And the idea that you can just take a happy pill. And, of course, what does that remind you of?
I mean... That's Brave New World.
I know, Brave New World, you know. But then again, it's not a conspiracy. It's just unfolding this. It goes back to your article of what the New World Order is. Is this just history unfolding and a series of different events is reacting with one another? Or is this, are they planning this out? I mean, these are different phases that they're rolling out. It's hard to believe that there isn't at least some coordination going on here because it follows the script, you know, that we were given back in 1932.
Yeah, and they all write the books about it, and they all say they have differences over strategies and game plans, but, you know, I always come back to the same agreed upon things. Everybody must agree on, amongst this crew, radical depopulation, the supposed phony resource war,
mm-hmm.
Which is the crisis for why everybody has to die. You have to agree on Darwinism and materialism. This is like the confession of faith for this cult, quite literally. You have to believe in complete technocratic dominance and rule for every area of life. So no economic sphere that's free, no free exchange of information, no none of that. That all gets locked down in every area, eventually becomes under technocratic control. Now, earlier phases, they thought it would be managerial technocrats, but as the AI is developed, I genuinely think these people are going to think that the AI is going to sufficiently run everything. They think that they'll be able to bypass the past, you know, problems of human error and human weakness by AI.
Yeah, and in this case, the aging baby boomer generation is perfect for this because as they find it harder to drive cars in parallel park, they'll get the self-driving cars that are, you know, they're monitored and controlled, and then the millennials and they've grown up on the internet, completely wired in, and they don't even like to go through the inconvenience of physically filling out a paper form anymore. So everything is online. They don't like the idea of even taking out a credit card, even cash to buy something, just want to swipe their phone. Pretty soon it'll be a chip in their hand. They swipe it, you know, you know, and this is culture, Craig, because what happens is they'll be watching commercials and shows, and they'll be, I don't know, CSI Miami. And, you know, this will be a subplot, you know, how this is normal and cool. And, I think they did that in CSI Miami. That was a subplot. And people just get conditioned to it. Look at convenience, right? They sell you with convenience, right? Everything's easier because you don't have to, you know. You look at the cloud, right? Where we live in an age where storage of data is cheaper than ever, easier than ever than people to store their own data, but yet they're pushing the cloud network everywhere, government, and they say cloud, you know, the security with the cloud. There is no security with the cloud. That's the point. And you can look at this as a scale. You can look at convenience and security. And the more convenient something is, the less secure it is. This is the way it is. You know?
It's also think about removing you from having possessions.
Yes, anything physical. Right?
So, yeah, I mean, everything is going to be virtual. You're not going to have books. You're not going to have music. You're not going to have records and CDs. The intention is to transition it all over into the supposed ease of digital. And as you mentioned, the doing away of cars, you won't be driving your own car around. You will I mean, I think Uber and this kind of stuff has actually transitioned to that. They've already tested out the AI Ubers. They're going to start in the cities and megalopolises, especially. They're going to start saying there's too much traffic, too many cars, so let's get rid of the cars, which will sound reasonable. But then what they're going to do is try to move that into the rest of the spheres of life and say, you know, you just can't keep having all this excess. Like H.G. Wells says, it says that humans are just using up all the energy on the earth. When I go to hotels now, I see little placards in the bathrooms of the hotel that say, if you don't need to use two towels, don't use two towels because you're helping the earth.
Yeah, it's annoying. It really is. It's this moralistic approach to it.
It's more, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Basically, you should just die, right? Like, you need to die. I mean, come on. You really need to die because
you're using
Mother Earth.
Some self-talking, like, Asian toilet saying, you use too much toilet paper. You know? But, yeah, I mean, that's... I was thinking... Kind of gets back to our topic regarding baby boomers, and I was thinking the Disney Corporation. What part did the Disney Corporation have in formulating the attitude and outlook of the boomer generation, and what relation does it have to DARPA and the military-industrial complex? SRI, Stanford Research Institute, which produce that, you know, that video I sent you with before there's Johnny Five, there was Shaky, the robot. SRI consulted on the construction of Disneyland.
Yep.
The same year they broke ground in Disneyland, that's when SRI was also consulting with MKUltra with CIA.
Yep.
A decade later, they're in Florida, Central Florida, and the CIA is facilitating the purchase of land for the Disney Corporation, for Disney World. Paul Helliwell and, what was his name? Donovan. Bill Donovan's law firm worked with Disney so they could buy the land on the cheap. They actually violated the U.S. Constitution and Florida State Constitution. They actually set up a puppet government in order to acquire the land. I'm reading the article about it. This guy called Finding Florida is a book about this. It covers this a lot. And how Paul Helliwell said, it's kind of like what we did in Vietnam.
Wow.
But look at Disney World. That's kind of like the what they vision. Of course, Epcot's the experimental planned community of tomorrow, but the whole idea of this sort of surveillance, lockdown, control thing in the name of entertainment, security, and convenience. And people buy into it. They love it. And I think you were talking to somebody, I forget what show it was, and you went to Disney World to make a videotape, and you notice everyone's on their iPhones in Disneyland or Disney World.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I was there to get some video footage for putting together a little video on the kind of thing that you're talking about, because there's just so many neat things about Disney that most people don't know, especially like Florida or Celebration Florida, which is Walt's little creepy town that he created. Of course, that all has gone away. I don't think Disney doesn't even own Celebration anymore. Some other company, but a lot of the Disney rules are still in effect for this city. I was kind of blown away when I learned a long time ago that Disney kind of created its own provisional government to set that big test tube up. But it's not just been SRI and what you mentioned. Many companies, many of the giant Fortune 100 will, for example, frequently for many decades sponsor the rides there.
Yeah, Siemens
and stuff like that. Siemens. Monsanto. Did you know Monsanto has for a long time sponsored rides at Disney? Yep. And I didn't know this, but Chiquita Banana. They have an entire ride. And apparently this has been there for a long time. I just didn't ever go on it or know it.
Chiquita, I think, used to be United Fruit, right?
Yep.
So they're CIA right there, right?
Yep. And when you go on this ride, they show you all of this organic hydroponic stuff that they're going to grow in these special ways, and they're going to feed the world. There will poverty will no longer be a problem. Hunger in the world will be solved by all this great technology. And when you get to the end of the ride, it says it's all about like no population, right? It's all about austerity. To help feed the world, you got to do your part by buying into all this green. So in other words, this green agenda that's everywhere being presented, that's, you would think, oh, it's anti-capitalist? Well, it's all the giant corporations that are promoting the green agenda.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that kind of the point that I was trying to get across to the boomer the entire time? Wasn't I trying to tell you, Mr. Boomer, that it's the Fortune 100 that promote the tranny green agenda everywhere? It's not the commie. It's not the KGB. It's the Fortune 100. And it's not a bunch of KGB people who infiltrated the Fortune 100.
Yeah, and just think about the... Well, I guess you could look at some of the Disney programming in the 60s as being a little bit, I guess, more less malign than what was fed to later generations. But now, what Disney did was it earned people's trust.
Yeah, and Walt seems to be a weirdo, but he doesn't seem to be a weirdo to the extent that things have gone now. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, if you look at some of the programming, I was just looking at examples of scenes on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sexual innuendos and jokes that are made on that show. And if you watch some of the old Disney cartoons, of course, there's a feed on YouTube which shows all this stuff. Obviously, there's weird sexual imagery in these cartoons and all that. But of course, now with the later Disney Corporation, with the Pop-Tart thing, where they produce these stars that lose it at age 18 or something, and it's there again. A lot of the stuff is just it's the childhood program has become much much creepier and much more, I think, menacing than it was. I don't know, maybe 40 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the CIA and all that stuff was corrupt back then, for sure. It was an arm of the Rockefellers and all that. But, certainly, 50s and 60s Disney films. I mean, I think, for example, I think Sleeping Beauty is a really good film. I really enjoy the artwork in that film. I think it's pretty amazing. And that's a different beast. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't bad. There's no telling what they were doing even then. But it just gets worse and worse and worse.
There's some things like Jamie Hanshaw, right? She talks about how the whole mother thing with Cinderella, these things. So the messaging is there. And they're borrowing some of these old fairy tales. I always like the fact that Disney is the most, jealous when it comes to intellectual property and copyright when they stole all their stories.
That's funny.
But we're in a different phase now. These things have to unfold. Now we're coming to an age where it's presenting itself. The monster is out for all to see, right? Because they feel confident if they've changed the culture. Like I said, a healthier culture would reject a lot of this stuff.
But
it becomes traumatized and weakened, and it doesn't have the wherewithal and the confidence to question these things anymore. Parents are no longer as discerning. The boomer generation was less discerning and more morally compromised than their parents' generation in many respects. But the divorce revolution didn't kick in really until the 80s, right?
That's a good point.
The 80s.
Yeah, and that affected the boomers because they had been through the sexual revolution.
Yeah, and the psychosexual effect of that, obviously we've talked about the Burleson memo, the Jaffe memo, predicting all the effects of sexual liberation would be higher rates of homosexuality, abortion, family breakup, abuse, and trauma.
Also, you would know this probably. When was porn legalized?
Well, it was effectively legalized by the Supreme Court in the 1950s.
Well, okay, but not real nasty porn, because Playboy magazine could show breasts and things like that. But when did it get really hardcore, with the porn that we think of maybe in the 70s or the 80s?
Yeah, that was what decision was it? The 1969?
1969?
Okay,
so it's ironically. Tail end of this, so it's part of the 60s sexual revolution.
Yeah, what happened? You had, Playboy magazine come on, then you had the legal decisions there to sort of go along with the same thing with the Kinsey report. I mean, these things are unfolding in patterns. You have Kinsey there in 49-50 to provide a sort of academic cover for the sexual revolution and also for pornography. And lo and behold, you have Playboy 1954. And just serendipitously, Hugh Hefner gets the photographs of Marilyn Monroe, who becomes a star.
Mm.
And the first cover of Playboy magazine had Marilyn Monroe on the cover. And she was she just became a star. Now, do you think that's just a coincidence? I mean,
but I'm saying like, so, but boomers would be, you know, hitting puberty.
Yes. The 60s. It was the 60s. And I was talking to Joe Atwell about that, about pornography. And he was saying that kids were known to get more haircuts in the late 60s because the barbershop, local barbershop, had Playboy in it. And so the idea is, what they did is they said, well, it's Playboy, you only sell it to adults. And the point I always make is, yeah, but once it gets out there, how do you control its proliferation? Because I don't know about you, when I was coming of age, the way I got a hold of Playboy was someone's father got it. Or
yeah, somebody's dad had it.
It was in a trash bin or something. The point is they knew that it was going to go out there. But, of course, the Internet generation, it's the Communications Decency Act, which really is the Communications Indecency Act, which allows for pornography to be transmitted over the Internet. That was 1996, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, you had these courts decisions in the late 60s, and by 73, you had pornography, I think it was Deep Throat, being run in a mainline theater. Before then, it was in the red light district. In 73 was the first time that you had a mainline pornographic film. And you also had, then, of course, Hollywood films became increasingly pornographic with Last Tango in Paris, you know, with Marlon Brando. Tomorrow, by today's standards, now, like I was just, you turn on USA Network, I think Mr. Robot, and you can watch two guys sodomizing each other in the middle of the day if you're, happen to click the TV on.
Yeah, I quit. When that came on, I quit watching that show.
Yeah.
I was like, because I thought it might be interesting for the predictive programming stuff, and then that was like, what is, my gosh.
Yeah, there was the Supreme Court, there is that the redeeming quality, the standard in pornography, that is, if you just have a storyline to it, and, the story is this guy's delivering pizza. The
story is somebody's laid.
Yeah.
Story is a pool boy. Yeah. Okay.
So, but the courts were there to facilitate it. And that goes back to even further back, I think.
Right. So, I mean, there's got to be, somebody should do it, write a thing on the CIA involvement in porn. Cause I guarantee you I know about Playboy and that there's had to be probably some CIA connection to Hugh Hefner and all that. But
yeah, I mean, what happens is, and this is kind of funny how you look at these things. It's almost like, with Ms. Magazine having corporate banking, corporate funding, it's not going to be directly the CIA, although Gloria Steinem had direct CIA connections with the Congress of Culture of Freedom.
It'll be a company.
It'll be a company, a banking, a publishing house or something that's connected to the CIA. But good example was with Time Life, Gordon Parks, the black photographer for Time Life, who helped infiltrate the Black Panthers for the FBI, he was commissioned by MGM to direct the blaxploitation films in the 1970s.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about that.
Yeah, and so there's an example of cultural manipulation through the CIA. But again, it's James Aubrey, who was a CIA asset working, who controlled MGM. And he's the one who made that decision. And so these movies are being produced the same way that Frank Carlucci would facilitate the importation of pornography into Portugal, or the CIA was producing pornographic films in Germany in the 1970s in southern Germany to undermine the Catholic culture in southern Germany.
Wow.
So it's all out there. And I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, if you figure, Ms. Magazine and National Review probably having CIA funding because, Wilma F. Buckley worked for Yard Hunt.
Absolutely.
So something like Playboy Magazine, if Kinsey's getting foundation funding a decade before, in 1950, then I would have to say that Playboy magazine, if you were to examine its books, you'd probably find some sort of foundation or corporation,
But it's important to stress that these sexual freedoms are being pushed not by the KGB, but by the elites of the West, and not just the Zionist elites, but also Gentile elites, right?
Yeah, it was an American Jewish committee working in conjunction with CIA.
With the CIA.
There was the authoritarian personality was thought to weaponize eroticism for the purposes of destroying the family and destroying ethnicity, because they saw it as a threat. Of course, this also served the purposes of the Rockefellers.
For population.
For population control. And we were talking earlier about the baby boomer generation. The baby boom was largely driven by the Catholics. Mm. That was driven by the Catholics. And the Catholics, and American Catholics, were particularly targeted in the 1950s and 60s by the establishment, which, mm. you know, E. Michael Jones writes about in Slaughter of Cities, and also in Libido Dominandi. But the idea of you need to change, alter Catholic consciousness to make them good Americans.
Yes.
But this goes way back. I mean, I was listening to a talk today talking about John Carroll of the Catholic bishop, the Carroll family.
And they were Americanists all the way back at the beginning.
They were. He was a Freemason. And he traveled with Ben Franklin to Canada. And Ben Franklin, I think, who was he meeting with? I think Ben Franklin only met the Pope or something in Europe. He went to Europe. And he suggested that he become a bishop because when they traveled together, he never talked about religion. He's supposed to be a prelate. But so this goes way back, the Americanist thing.
Solange Hertz hit me to that a long time ago in her book on Americanism, where she critiqued the Carrolls because they, from the outset, were saying that, you know, Americanism can become Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Not the other way around.
Yes.
It ought to be, if you're faithful to your theology, you're supposed to believe in the confessional state. And what's so funny is that all of these Vatican II guys and the John Courtney Murray types, they're all very open about the fact that, oh, we don't want a confessional state anymore. We want the progressive state. America's the best option for this.
Yeah. Which you mentioned earlier tonight in your own show, but David Wimhoff's book, John Courtney Murray, in the America, what's that title? John Courtney Murray.
I'm Life in the American Proposition.
American Proposition, yeah. The doctrinal warfare program changed the Catholic Church. And, I mean, he said, people like Courtney Murray, who was also put on the cover of Time magazine,
Who also did LSD and had mystical experiences and enlightenment from his drug trips.
Yeah. It's rather Luciferian, if you ask me.
Teilhard says the same thing. He's had these mystical experiences of seeing everything being one. And there were some gem quotes in that book, by the way, too. I had to include some of them in my book about the importance of Hollywood. C.D. Jackson talking about the importance of Hollywood. CFR, John McCloy talking about the importance of Hollywood in promoting Americanism.
And it used to be understood that it was a heresy.
Absolutely.
You know, and now it's we have the current pope, you know, embracing the idea of separation of church and state as opposed to just making an accommodation with it.
Right.
Which is a complete reversal of, you know, the understanding of you know, the whole idea of a commonwealth, of a Christian commonwealth.
Well, Pius XI already has a feast called Feast of Christ the King, and that's still on the calendar as far as I know. And the whole purpose of that feast was to argue against the people who were saying Americanism. It was to argue against the people who taught that should be a separation of the church and state, that the state should not be confessional. The whole purpose of the feast is that.
Mm-hmm.
Just look into the history, look into his I don't think it's an encyclical, I think it's a Apostolic Act or whatever it's called, Act of the Apostolic See, about the Feast of Christ the King. It was all about the fact that these scumbags were trying to destroy the idea of the confessional state.
Yeah, and they did that in I mentioned Portugal and Spain, and also Italy, too. Yeah.
Well, that's been done in the whole world.
Yeah.
The whole world has removed the confessional state to do what H.G. Wells said they would do. H.G. Wells said the confessional state is the enemy to our progress. He says in the New World Order, he says, look, Marx and all these guys, he says, you can't just get rid of, for example, Hitler. He says, when you get rid of Hitler, there's a whole other thing that you haven't gotten rid of, and that's the family. That's like gender. He says, all that stuff's got to be gotten rid of. He says, and the main institution in our way is Christianity.
Yeah, they've and they offer liberty, but liberty isn't an objective, right? It's a free will is there for you to make the right decision to get to the truth.
It's pretty amazing because in this book you might be thinking, well, what kind of liberty could H.G. Wells be offering if he's just said everything has to come under total control, even your biology? Ah, the liberty to be offered is the liberty to you, for you to believe that you have the freedom to do whatever you want in terms of your pleasures and your sexuality. So the libido dominandi, that's the liberty that they concocted would be sufficient to convince everybody that they had freedom. So in other words, a pleasure dome, basically. That's your freedom.
Takes back to the French Revolution, right?
yeah. Let's have video games and games and LARPing and pretending and sports and sex, and not just sex, but eventually weaponized sex.
Right? It didn't DARPA also develop role playing games too?
Yes, they developed the simulant games through flight simulators, SimNet, it was called. And that eventually led to more advanced video game technology. But then the CIA and DARPA actually did studies on mass movements in World of Warcraft.
At the same time they're doing this with simulant technology, they're also developing a culture where men and women just can't get along anymore on their natural basis. So they rely on the fantasy world of computer games, of the perfect woman and the perfect man.
Yeah, and this is what this quote's kind of been going around now. Somebody dug it up. Jamie is who hit me to it a long time ago. But Anton LaVey, back in the 60s, said that the sex bot would come and it would be part of the satanic aeon. He says that it's phase five. I don't know exactly why he calls it phase five, but he says phase five will be the introduction of the sex bot into the satanic aeon.
Did you ever get like the two extremes of, you know, you have the Mythgau man or the man who the pickup artist mentality, and you have this the example of women, you know, the hypergamy obsessed women.
Well, the MGTOWs have checked out. MGTOWs no longer believe in finding a woman. At least the guys who want to learn some game, they at least learn it to find a woman and get with a woman. But the MGTOWs are actually now have been radicalized, or maybe they were begun to be radicalized. I don't know. But
yeah,
they're not even part of like men's rights. It's now moving into this weird thing where it's its own separate thing where you check out and you don't even interact with women. Now, ironically, in the history of civilizations, and particularly Western or Byzantine, there would already be a place for this if you wanted to enter into monastic life.
Yes.
You
could go in. Yeah.
Like if you don't want to deal with women and children and this kind of stuff, go into monastic life. You don't want to deal with that. But that has been removed, right? The traditional paths that you could take in a civilization and society, all that's been done away because now we're all equal and free and we're all the same under the coming technocracy. But no, now we have the internet is creating the identities that people are going to accept. And this gets back to what you're talking about with Disney, because what they're going to do is what you see in Westworld. Now, I know that sounds crazy, and I'm not talking about tomorrow. I'm talking about years down the road. And you say, how is that going to be? Well, I was just reading about Disney is now creating Star Wars World. Have you heard of this?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Now, guess what they're going to do? If you watch the videos, this is completely new in terms of large-scale theme attraction parks, because it's the first time that I'm aware of, maybe somewhere in China this exists, or Japan or something, but it'll be the first time that when you come to the theme park, you begin your journey as part of the story when you arrive and get at your hotel. So what this does is it allows the theme park, under the guise of writing you into the story, is that everything that you do, all the decisions that you make in the park, are part of your story. So basically large-scale D&D LARPing at the theme park. And they say that all the decisions you make, for example, you go to one of the cantina on Star Wars or whatever, Mos Eisley Cantina, and you go in there and you anger the bartender. And he says, get out of here, you Han Solo wannabe or whatever. When you go back to your hotel, the hotel knows all of the things that you did in the park. And this plays into the story. This is crazy. I told you, I knew when Westworld came out, that's what they're planning. They're planning to make large-scale theme parks where when you go to the theme park, you're now going to be part of the story. And Disney was planning this back when they introduced the thumbprint biological bioscanning when you to get into the park. That would be what they would do in the future. It was the Department of Defense that introduced that at Disney. So that's what they're going to do, is that the future theme park is no longer just pay your money and come ride the ride. It's you participate in this big LARPing experiment that is a cover for studying you in this whole controlled environment. So the only way that they would know all your decisions is if you're watched and tracked and traced the entire time that you're at Star Wars World.
And as the modernity, the modern world becomes void of all meaning and purpose, yes, people can be drawn into this fantasy world. They can be somebody, something matters, and they can live out a fantasy. I mean, I can see a whole lot, a whole chunk of the future generations doing this, sort of checking out of reality. I mean, even to the extent that they're doing this, they're not engaged in the real world. And
it's going to go crazier, Tim. Yeah. People are going to be offered. I'm going to predict this. People will be offered to live there. You can move and live in this. I think they're going to bring these virtual worlds into reality, and people are going to exchange living in the world and freedoms and stuff to be, say, part of an experimental new way of living in the theme park. And what this is going to do is transition us into the real technocracy is not going to be you in a FEMA camp. It's not going to be you, in THX. It's going to be a pleasure dome where you're controlled, and there's going to be punishment reward things that we're already seeing with like China's social credit or with being deplatformed.
This is the gamification of life. Yeah.
Yes, the gamification of everything, and you'll be punished when you don't do, you know, what's according to whatever the theme park's guidelines. And but I guarantee you people are going to sign on to this. It'll be a giant slate. It'll be like something from Black Mirror or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they'll get people drawn into it because it's going to be done under the guise of entertainment. It's all going to be voluntary, seemingly voluntary. But I argue that, again, there's subtle ways of coercion. Coercing people into these things. One thing is, the problem with modernity, the modern world, is it gets at you in so many, it gets under your skin in so many different ways, right? I mean, it's just what you kind of accept these things gradually, and whether it's the iPhone or the internet, the technology entertaining these things, it's going to change your attention span, how you get your information, and your how often you go outside and interact with the world. So gradually you just get you will become sort of you become part of this world, because each successive generation is going to be that much more cut off, you know, from the natural world and reality, you know.
Yep, that's the goal.
You know, and there's no way, I mean, how do you articulate this to, you know, to a millennial?
I've been saying what the future will be is mega cities, and they will probably, this sounds crazy, but they'll probably theme the mega cities based on movies. Imagine a mega city that's Star Wars. I'm serious. Watch that happen. Imagine a mega city that's, I don't know, Harry Potter. I know that sounds nutty, but just watch and see if that happens.
Yeah.
You didn't think there would be a giant Star Wars world where you participate in the LARP the whole time you're there, did you? But now that's coming in 2019. So anyway.
And the fact that Star Wars would capture the imagination when there's so much going on in the real world that should really garner your attention and your study and your understanding. But people get caught up in the fantasy world of Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, Las Vegas is already this, in a way, already, you know what I mean? Like Las Vegas was the adult Disneyland a long time ago. And I think what's going to happen is you're not going to have these, you know, Las Vegas for the adults and Disney for the kid. These worlds are going to start merging. And because the corporations are gradually being solidified and turned into a single entity. And we already know that there, you know, are a majority shareholders that control like a huge portion of the global economy already. You know, that study that came out a few years ago, Swedish or Dutch study, whatever, it's about a handful of corporations can basically control the global economy. They're going to reorganize the world. And the smart cities are not just going to be... I mean, think about it. What would draw you to a city, like just some boring city or a city that was themed, right? So all this stuff that was happening with Disney was not just about Disney. It was about how they would, how they'll construct the global government. The world government will be constructed this way. You should see one of the things that was on display was the Disney they're building in China, and it was mind blowing. It blew me away what they're building in China. Disney World in China. You hear me? Communist China. They're building a giant global Disney that will be like the Disney of all Disneys.
What do the boomers say when you tell them that Disneyland's building a park in Red China?
We finally won. We got them. America's won. Anyway, but yeah, look up the plans for Disney in China, and look at all the parks and all the, it's pretty mind blowing what they're planning. But I think that's what they're going to do. Is this will replace the nation state, and it won't just be a boring city state, right? To replace the nation state, the megalopolis, it's going to be a themed one. But anyway, I think I'm going to have to head pretty soon. I got some stuff to do.
Well, listen, Jay, I want to thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
Of course, your book, Esoteric Hollywood 2, More Sex Cults, Symbols and Film, is due out soon. It's at the publisher.
Yep.
It's Jay's Analysis, jaysanalysis.com. You can sign up for membership there for $4.95 a month, $60 a year, to get all his media and his other research. We were talking tonight about boomers, baby boomers, and also your recent analysis of DARPA, Anna Jacobson's book, The Pentagon's Brain. So Jay, I want to thank you. So I'll keep out an eye out on some of the other stuff. I'll let you go.
All right. And I want to say too, we have almost 300 live, which is a good audience. You guys check out, Tim Kelly's podcast. That's TH, Kelly 67 on YouTube. And you can find his podcast on, Podomatic, right?
Yeah. Podomatic, Our Interesting Times.
It's, Our Interesting Times. So I'll have those links below, but, that's a pretty big audience, Tim. We had a good audience here for you.
Great. I hope we kept them entertained. Are you not entertained?
No, they love it. They say thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Jay. I'll let you go. I know you got a lot of other things. Thanks a lot, and I'll post as soon. I'll send you the link.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Good night, then. Bye-bye.
just one.